I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. And we are, we're doing another special series. This is a special edition series. I'm having a little bit of trouble explaining that, but we do special editions from time to time. And the reason for that is, like to emphasize certain things, certain aspects of critical thinking, certain things that we should consider. And the way we can organize our thinking process so that it can respond to the challenges that we face. And I guess you could say that, you know, that our particular mindset here is that thinking is not necessarily automatic. It can be organized. Thinking is not necessarily a totally naturally occurring process that emanates from the human brain, but it can be organized. It can be structured in a certain way. It can be set up so it is, in fact, agile and adaptive. We can think of our thinking process, the mechanisms by which thought occurs. We can think of that as a system. And I like to use the metaphor that it is a complex adaptive system. And what do I mean by complex? Well, first of all, complex means that it is nonlinear. Our brains are extremely complicated, as well as being officially declared as a complex system. That's been some time ago. There is a body of knowledge out there. I've mentioned this before. And a lot of this work is being spearheaded by the Santa Fe Institute and I have joined that organization. I mean, I contribute to it and financially, and I participate in many of the educational programs that they offer. And that's a kind of a breakthrough. Some time ago, a group of people decided that they were going to move away from mainstream thought and move into the arena where one seriously considers what it means for something to be complex. And so complex has developed their own science. It is complexity science is one of the terms that they use. And our brains are such a thing. And so does that mean that we can't understand it? No, it doesn't mean that. We can understand, at least to a certain extent, we can understand complex things. We can understand complexity. Our understanding is, of course, growing, but we have some basic understanding of it. And so by applying some of this understanding, we can consider that how we think can be understood, how one goes about thinking about things, the how and the why, how we think can be understood to a certain extent. And based upon that understanding, we can improve it. We can take something that has some potential, or we could say we could take something that has a lot of potential to do great things, and we can help it along. We can encourage it. We can direct it. We can organize it such that it achieves some high level of performance with respect to the things that we find important. Okay, so we're not talking here about casual thinking. We're not talking here about some randomized thought patterns emerging from some nondescript sources. We're not talking about that at all. What we're talking about here is we're talking about the fundamental ability for us to help our cognitive machinery, help it perform well, help it perform better, perhaps, help it perform in an optimum way. Or I guess a better way of saying that is, how can we make sure that the way we are thinking about things, if in fact we have encountered something that is unusual, if in fact we have encountered a situation that is confusing, a situation that is complex, a situation that has the potential of doing us harm, affecting us negatively in some way, degrading our ability to perform, and putting up roadblocks on our pathway to success. If we have encountered such a situation, is there, first and foremost, is there a way that we could think about these things that provides us with a higher chance, a higher level of probability of overcoming these challenges and achieving mission success? The answer is, I guess you could say that the answer is, at least as far as I can understand it, the answer is, yes, there is a good way to do such a thing. Yes, there is a more or less a proven method to do such a thing that we want to do with our thoughts and with our brains and with our minds. There is a way. Is it is it ultimately the best way? I don't think so. I think we're still learning about lots and lots of things. And I guess you could say that we're still struggling as a species to help ourselves and others along this this journey of enlightenment and this journey toward achieving wisdom. Okay, so why are we doing this? Well, we are now. This is episode number 2 in the special series that we're doing on how to think. Now, and that's it. I mean, that's kind of like a, you know, you can say, well, that's kind of a general statement. What do you mean by how to? We all know how to think. Well, my position is that that's not necessarily so. To be able to know or to be able to learn or to be able to teach someone how to think is possible, but it's not all that well understood. Most of what we get from our institutions, our educational institutions, our training programs especially, and other places, it could be books, articles, videos, audios, you name it. Most of what we get is we get stuff that others want us to think. They present things to us with respect to what to think. So we are getting almost entirely, we are getting things that fall in the category of what to think. And what are the things that you need to know? And almost nothing that is given to us or even presented, almost nothing out there is helpful in terms of setting us up so that we know how to think with respect to certain situations and certain challenges that we have encountered in this game of life. All right, so why are we doing this? Well, again, as we mentioned last week, there is a, as far as I'm concerned, there's a growing concern that the information we are getting and the political response to these to this COVID-19 pandemic is, I think, far and away misleading. It is giving us a certain kinds of information that appears to me to be designed to increase or sustain levels of hysteria and impending catastrophe instead of looking at the particular issue soberly, looking at it objectively, probably most importantly, and looking at it with respect to what's the best way for us to proceed, get on, go forward, taking into account the things that we can do that would be productive without doing collateral damage. I think what we're seeing here is we're seeing a good number of the government operatives and the members of the political system are not at all taking into account what we may be attempting to do might in fact result in collateral damage to this thing that we're trying to deal with and bring forward certain things that are counterproductive. It could very well be that what we're doing is largely counterproductive, and we're struggling mightily, but not being able to deal at all with this pandemic in any kind of a mature, sober way. And so, because that's what I see, and that's what we see on this side of the microphone, is that along with this, hopefully that this vaccine that we can get up and running quickly. Along with that, I think we need a national effort to improve and enhance our ability to think. And with respect to encouraging all of us to learn and teach how to think, to learn how to think, and to teach it to others, and to encourage all of us individually and collectively, encourage us to be able to know how to think about certain things with respect to the challenges that we face in our lives, in the lives of our families and communities, as well as the country. So this is How to Think, episode number 2 in this special series that we are in the midst of. And just keep in mind that these special series are worthy of being repeated. So we do, on occasion, we do repeat these. Of course, they are available in podcast format on a number of podcast platforms now. They are available for on demand. The radio show that we have on Red State Talk Radio on the weekends, we may repeat these from time to time because of the importance of the subject. I think this is a particularly important subject, actually. And it's probably one of the more important things. Now, we have, you know, to be fair, over the course of the show, we have put on a number of special editions, a series on various aspects to deal with critical thinking, and they are all part of the picture. But here, we're going to focus on the very specific and a burning question, if you will, is when we encounter something that is mission critical, the first order of business is to actively consider how I or how we should think about what has happened to us. How should we think? Not what to think, but how should we think? And once we go there, once we ask the question, all right, let's consider how we should think. And what does that mean? That means that we are bringing to the forefront certain abstract considerations and certain inquiry tools and processes and methods by which we can uncover the real causes of the issue or the problems, to clarify things that are confusing to us, and to proceed down the road of finding effective solutions that will ultimately achieve mission success and not do collateral damage to the very thing that we are trying to protect or to recover. And so that's the whole point that we're trying to deal with. What got me started on this? Okay, well, you know, that's a good question. What got me started on this is that, you know, I was looking at this whole, the daily news dump, if you will, right now in the midst of this phase one recovery, phase two recovery. Right now, they're talking about the coronavirus cases have spiked in certain segments or certain sections of the country. The coronavirus deaths have spiked in certain sections or areas of the country. And people are using, the media is using a lot of words and phrases that are designed, I think, to maintain high levels of hysteria across the board. I know that as I speak, California is retreating from some of their opening, business opening policies because of the perceived spike. And they used that term. So here's what I did. All right, I took one state. You can do this too. In fact, I would encourage this, all of us, to do this. I took one state that is kind of like the hotbed of the coronavirus cases, or the hotspot, or the red zone of coronavirus cases. And this state happens to be Texas. Okay, so we have certain data that we can gather, but we haven't, what's missing in this whole equation of thought is a very important thing for us to consider, and that is the population of the state versus the size of the state in terms of geography. So the population, in other words, the population density. What is the population and what is the population density? Here we're dealing with a human condition here. And we're dealing with a societal confrontation. We're dealing with a human catastrophe. All right, so we're dealing with humans that live in certain areas, in certain locations. All right, so this is just, you know, some basic stuff that you can get from a couple of sources on the World Wide Web. First of all, you can get the size of the state of Texas. It is very large, by the way. You can get the population. The population of Texas is almost exactly 30 million people. Okay, so you can see, and you can divide that into the number of acres, the size of the state, based upon acres or square miles, if you will. That's probably even better. And you can get the population density. All right, so the population of Texas is 30 million. Right. How many cases, according to the CDC website, that you can go to, and this is updated every day, you can go to the CDC COVID-19 website, and you can get the total number of coronavirus cases that have been reported in the state of Texas currently. As of this recording, it is 264,313. All right, so for convenience, I'm just going to round that out. All right, so I'm going to round that out to 300,000 cases. And this makes it easy for us to consider the data, if you will. Okay, so and this is really interesting. All right, so we have 30 million population. We have approximately 300,000 cases, and we have just slightly more than 3,000 deaths attributed in some way to coronavirus. Now, there should be a fourth number here, but there isn't, as far as I can get right at the moment. There isn't a fourth number. The fourth number should be how many of those deaths attributed to coronavirus, COVID-19, how many of those deaths had underlying conditions or had pre-existing conditions along with it? And last but not least, there ought to be how many of those deaths were among the population that was under 30 years of age. Those two numbers are not available that I can find right at the moment. Others may be able to come up with that. But nevertheless, we have these three numbers. We have 30 million total population. We have about 300,000 confirmed cases, and we have almost exactly 3,000 deaths. Okay. If you take the number of cases, or if you take the number of deaths with respect to the population, right? And let's do that, all right? So let's take 3,000 divided by 30 million. That happens to be 0.0001 of the percentage of the population that has died or passed away due to coronavirus. Okay. If you just took that, if you just said, okay, and we could add the square miles to that as well. I haven't done that, but I think that's probably a pretty good idea. We could add that too. We could say, all right, this is a state. We could say this is a prototypical state. It doesn't even have to identify it as Texas. This is a prototypical state, has this population, it has this square miles of area, it has this number of cases and this number of deaths. And we can look at that now and say, okay, with respect to that particular situation that has been de-identified with respect to the specifics, let's look at it from an abstract standpoint. With respect to that, would you consider that state to have to be in the midst of a pandemic? And at what point do you characterize a particular disease or infection as a pandemic? And how does that stack up against other communicable diseases and other health issues that people are dying from? How does that stack up across the board? And you can see what's happening here. In my view, what's happening here is we have just completely lost our ability to be able to think critically. We've lost it. It's gone. It's out the window. We are no longer able to do such a thing, nor are we able to encourage others and demand that from our news organizations, from our professionals that are employed to provide us with current information that we can use to protect ourselves and improve our lives and our prosperity. We don't demand that these news source providers all be formally trained in the area of critical thinking. We don't even ask that. And I don't know why we don't, because this has gotten to the point where we are now in the midst of a national emergency. And I'm sorry that, you know, you could say, Kevin, you're overstating this thing. Let's not get hysterical and stuff like that. Okay, yes, but look at what we're seeing here. We're seeing a dumbing down to the point that it has reached a level that is preposterous. The attempts, by the way, of the dumbing down of the society, the dumbing down of the population in general, and the blind acceptance of these terms and these headlines that have no substance to support them. They are terms, phrases, and headlines that have no supporting objectivity behind them. They're just hollow words and phrases designed only to encourage hysteria. We need to have a national effort to improve our ability to think, to teach us how to think with respect to anything that comes along that is, in fact, and let's make it a little bit more specific here, okay? And this is what we're trying to do. And we'll get into this later, but let's make it a little bit more specific. Let's say, okay, how should we think, how to think when we encounter something that is mission critical? And that's the key performance objective here. If you want to hang your hat on something, I think this is probably a pretty good place to hang it. How to think when things become mission critical, not in the normal, casual, everyday, going down to the shopping center or whatever. I'm talking about when things become mission critical, either in your personal lives, the lives of your family, your community, or your country. When things become mission critical, how should we think with respect to that so that we can deal with this situation effectively, so that we can deal with this situation productively, so we can deal with the situation appropriately without incurring collateral damage that will do far greater harm, perhaps, than the original misfortune. And so that's the whole reason behind this. In my view, we are at a, you know, at a turning point here as a nation. We have got to either embrace this whole idea, learning how to think, or we are going to succumb to whatever tyranny is out there, whatever are the controllers trying to achieve so that they can enslave us mentally and physically. I do think that probably there is a concerted effort to do such a thing. I'm not involved in the conspiracy theories and stuff like that, but I do think that we have got to become quite adamant about the fact that we all need to embrace this whole idea of how can we think critically when things become mission critical, when things become challenging, important, and we need to find the best pathway forward. How do we do that? Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to listen to a couple of nice audio clips that hopefully will be helpful as we proceed on this special edition of Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast, How to Think, episode number 2. Okay, we're going to listen to another audio clip here. And this is also entitled How to Think, Not What to Think by Jesse Richardson. He was speaking at a TEDx engagement recently. And this is his own words. I think it's important for us to consider others that are attempting to deal with this issue in some kind of meaningful way to give us a broader perspective of ideas and concepts and the way information is presented. And that's a whole point behind this show, by the way, is that we encourage others to contribute to this idea because it is so important. We all ought to consider ourselves to be contributors to this idea of being able to think critically particularly during times of stress and difficulty. All right, so here it is.
We can probably all agree that education is important, right? That's pretty universal. But I want you to think back to your time in school and see if you can remember something. See if you can remember a time when you were actually taught how to think, where the lesson you were being given was specifically teaching little you as a kid with big wide eyes and a sponge-like brain how to go about the business of thinking. Now, if your experience was anything like mine, you'd probably struggle to think of a single instance where that occurred. And when you think about it, that's completely insane, isn't it? In the at least, 10 years that we all spend in school, we get taught all sorts of knowledge, like, you know, this plus this equals that, such and such happened in 1982, which is great, but the actual teaching of how to think, not so much, right? So the idea I'd like to share today is that we need to teach kids how to think, not what to think. Now, if you're unfortunate enough to be talking to a conspiracy theorist, they might tell you that the reason we're not taught how to think is that the powers that be don't want us sheeple waking up to their lizard people GMO chemtrail vaccine propaganda or something. But I suspect the real reason is quite substantially more boring and plausible. As Sir Ken Robinson identified in his wonderful TED talk on how schools kill creativity, it's just kind of how the school system responded to industrialization. And now it's a big entrenched bureaucracy and bloody hard to change, right? And remember, we set this whole education system thing up around the same time that we thought hitting kids with sticks was a good idea. And if they had a cough, we gave them heroin-based cough syrup, like with actual heroin in it, which, you know, admittedly was pretty effective at calming them down. But the point is that we weren't exactly sophisticated in our understanding, you know? But now, as we all know, our world and our economy are changing and rapidly, and how we approach education needs to adapt. So what's different about teaching children how to think is that we're involving them in the process of their own learning. Instead of just telling them to memorize the right answer, we're asking them to engage their own minds, their own awareness, by questioning things, attaining understanding, not just knowledge. And that involvement, that engagement, is so important because it keeps a spark of curiosity alive that so often dies around the same time that kids start resenting the kind of only one right answer didactic nature of so much schoolwork. It's usually around grade 3 or 4. And when you alight that curiosity, you no longer have to push knowledge onto kids because they actually want to understand. There's no need for carrots and sticks to force learning because they become self-powered, nerdy little curiosity machines. And, and as a result of that, you know, they are, you know, able to think entirely of their own merits. But what are we actually talking about here, like when we say learning how to think? Well, I think part of it is creativity. But creativity isn't just some self-indulgent feely thing. It largely defines us as a species. I mean, when you think about it, almost every great innovation, political theory, or scientific breakthrough has sprung from creative thinking, right? So from Plato to Einstein, from agriculture to iPads, because creative thinking is, in essence, nothing more than making new connections. But to be clear, what I'm talking about here isn't creative expression. Art's great, but what I'm advocating is less like art and more like design. And the difference between art and design is that art is an expression, whereas design solves a problem. So the point of teaching kids how to think creatively is to teach them how to be adaptive, how to innovate in order to solve problems. Not sitting in a loft with red wine ciggies and a black skivvy suffering the burden of no one understanding their artistic genius, but sitting in a planning meeting or a startup incubator or anywhere else in the real world that contributes to our real world economy. So our schools need to teach creative thinking, but I think that's only half of it. Because teaching creative thinking is great, but if you're just open to new connections, then, you know, that's a little bit of a recipe for disaster as well, because you need to keep your thinking to account. Never trust a brain, especially your own, because we are, every single one of us, prone to cognitive biases, to prejudices and to the blinding effects of privilege and in-group psychology. We like to think of ourselves as, you know, really quite objective and clever, but the unfortunate truth is that we are all, to some extent, flawed, ignorant, and deluded, which, you know, sounds not good. But happily, we can do something about it by learning critical thinking skills. What critical thinking teaches us is how to question things rigorously, how to form sound, well-reasoned, coherent thoughts and arguments, and critically, how to identify bullshit. But perhaps the most important thing it teaches us is that it's good to be wrong, that the ideas we hold aren't us, and that we don't need to defend them to the death, and in fact, that we can change those ideas and that it is absolutely liberating to do so. It's something really fundamental to how we approach the world, to have the vulnerability and the humility to be receptive to the idea that I might be wrong, you know? It's profoundly transformative. And when we're trained as critical thinkers, something significant shifts because we become aware of our own thinking. Why do I think this? How have I come to this conclusion? We become, quite literally, self-aware. This is my thesis, that creative and critical thinking are two sides of the same coin, two parts of an equation that add up to how to think. And what's really interesting is that something happens when a mind is trained to think both creatively and critically, because that equation adds up to more than just the sum of its parts. There is a seed of genius, there is a fertility of understanding that allows a mind to grow to such great heights when it's able to think creatively in dynamic interplay with thinking critically. When those two aspects of our ability work together, amazing things happen. Da Vinci moments born from the cognitive alchemy of a mind that is free to play and explore, yet also disciplined to apply reason and rationality. And such a mind is also a fortress of understanding. It's largely impervious to the lies and the nefarious manipulations of politicians, the media, and the advertising industry, which presents me with something of a segue. So for the past 15 years or so, I've been manipulating people into buying things that they probably don't need, working as an advertising creative in the ad industry. And in that time, I've learned a fair bit about both creativity and bullshit. But perhaps the most important thing I learned is that if you want an ad to be effective, you need to create genuine engagement, and you need to do so using the power of simplicity. If you can get that right, then your ad doesn't feel like an ad anymore. Instead, it feels like something that someone might actually not hate and possibly even want to read, watch, or interact with. So, but what if we applied that same truth to education instead of advertising? Now, we all know that making learning fun and engaging is a good idea. That seems sort of obvious, but to be blunt, there really isn't much evidence of it in practice. And I think the reason for that is that the people who design school syllabuses usually aren't talented entertainers, nor trained designers, directors, or other creative professionals. And the unfortunate truth is that using Comic Sans and putting an illustration of a zany scientist up in the corner of the page doesn't actually make learning all that much fun, right? A great example of how to do it right is Horrible Histories. As the name suggests, it takes all the most awful aspects of history and puts it into a narrative form. And of course, kids absolutely love it because it's disgusting and fascinating. Another wonderful example of how education should be engaging happened when a scientist also happened to be a poet, because Carl Sagan didn't just teach us about the cosmos, he helped us to progress as a society. He changed how people think. Now, education is the most important cornerstone of civilization, isn't it? Shouldn't we be making it as engaging and effective as possible? Shouldn't we be applying the same rigor, the same innovation that we do to marketing, to education? So, a couple of years ago, I was teaching my own boys about logical fallacies, which is an area of critical thinking. And it occurred to me that maybe I could use my advertising powers for good instead of evil. Right? Now, fallacies are essentially like flaws in reasoning. And I wanted my boys to be aware of some of the more common ones, like the appeal to nature fallacy. But all the explanations I'd read online were these just impenetrably dense academic walls of text, you know? And so I did what I do at work when I'm given a 12-page communication strategy that I somehow have to fit onto a billboard that someone can read as they drive past in the car. I simplified. I tried to come up with some clear explanations and examples, and we could talk about in the car on the way to school in the morning, which was actually a really fun exercise. And I ended up putting together a poster with 24 of the most common logical fallacies, each with a single simple sentence that clearly explained the concept, right? And then it occurred to me that perhaps the same idea could work well online, and I could share it with other parents, teachers, and the world at large. And so with the help of some programmer friends, we came up with a Creative Commons website at yourlogicalfallacyis.com. The idea was that if you saw someone committing a fallacy online somewhere, you just link them to it. So if someone was misrepresenting an argument, you just link them to yourlogicalfallacyis.com/strawman, right? So probably the best way to explain is to show you an example from the site. So this one's false cause, in which we presume that a relationship between things means that one is the cause of the other. So for example, pointing to a fancy chart, Roger shows how temperatures have been rising over the past few centuries, whilst at the same time, the number of pirates have been decreasing. Thus, pirates cool the world and global warming is a hoax. So you get the idea. We also made the PDF available as a poster, the poster available as a PDF that anyone could download and print out for free. So we launched in 2012 and yourlogicalfallacyis.com blew up. It was tweeted by the likes of the lovely Mr. Stephen Fry, PC Myers, Wikipedia's Jimmy Wales, our own Dr. Carl, amongst thousands of others. It was featured on sites like Boing Boing and Upworthy, melted our servers, front-paged on Reddit, attracted over 3.5 million unique visitors, and is currently the top logical fallacy site online. It's getting around 10,000 unique visits a day, and most awesomely, the poster is currently being featured in many thousands of classrooms and other kids' bedrooms all around the world. So, thanks. So that went quite well. It would seem that making educational resources simple, fun, and free is a good idea, right? So what now? Well, what if we did the same kind of thing, but on a much bigger scale? What if we created a platform that allowed teachers to teach critical thinking, that allowed any student to be able to learn about philosophy and creative thinking? What if we created a platform where anyone where anyone would have access to resources on thinking? So just recently we launched the School of Thought International at schoolofthought.org. The purpose of the School of Thought is to help us question all schools of thought. What it is a not-for-profit online school where anyone can learn creative and critical thinking skills for free. The content, courses, tools, apps, games, and resources that we create will be available for everyone to use under a Creative Commons license, from primary school teachers through to university philosophy departments, and any student of any age anywhere in the world with an internet connection. And what if instead of flat images and walls of text, we took the liberty that an online school can take and created a fully immersive 3D campus designed to be a living vision of an enlightened learning utopia writ large in the virtual space? And what if we could actually help change our school system? I mean, why are we teaching kids what's on the periodic table of the elements, but we're not really teaching them why science is important, about philosophy of science, or how to read journalism with a critical mind, about how taking evidence-based approaches helped take us from the dark ages into this golden age of progress and technological wonder? I mean, how many lectures does the average student receive at school about following the rules, and yet we don't teach them ethics? We don't teach kids how to understand and internalize the difference between right and wrong. We just tell them, don't do that, that's wrong. And then we yell at them if they transgress. And we teach kids how to make extremely ugly shorts in home ec. But perhaps, teaching them about logic and reason might be at least as important life skills in this information age, you know? What if schools incorporated thinking as its own subject into their curricula? Is that such a crazy thought? I mean, what if we spent as much time teaching kids how to think for themselves as we do on English, math, or any other subject? Not only would this be great for kids in all aspects of their learning and life, and the future of our species, it will also mean that people with degrees in philosophy will finally be able to get a job. So We're approaching perhaps the most important and volatile period in all of human history. Now more than ever, we need to teach kids how to think, not what to think. And, you know, if we can do things like with, in collaboration with people like Peter Elton from the University of Queensland's Critical Thinking Project and Cutting Edge, who helped us put together these visualizations, I think that can be a possibility. I hope you find this to be an idea worth spreading. Thank you.
Okay, good discussion. This has been around a while, this audio and video. It's been around a while, and school of thought is a good idea. Now, the way I see it is it kind of opens up a lot of areas for innovation and creativity. Once we open the door, let's say, once we open the door that is marked how to think, we can perhaps enter a common area. And radiating from that common area is a number of pathways, and each one is marked with a specific word or a term. And we could go down each one of those pathways and discover certain things about key aspects of critical thinking and what have you. We could look at, for example, Jesse was talking about your logical fallacies. We could look at that. We could also look at critical thinking under high stress operations. We could look at complex problem solving. We could look at effective reasoning. We could look at judgment. We could look at ethics, morality and ethics. We could look at things like doing the right thing and all kinds of pathways related to this whole, this big idea, right? This big picture idea of how to think, or how should I think, or how should we think? In other words, how to think when situations require us to consider that first and foremost. And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about in future shows is in podcasts, is that we're going to be looking at certain important situations or certain things that we could likely encounter in our lives. And when those things are encountered, the first thing that we ought to be able to do is to understand how we should think about this particular encounter. Okay, I can see that we are now at the end of another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. Thank you all for being here. And remember, I think this is probably one of the most important things that we can deal with, which is how to think. And we will see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.